at The Letters, Sportsnet's Blue Jays podcast with Arden Zwelling and Ben Nicholson-Smith.
Hear this hand for Aaron Sanchez as he comes out of the game. 6 1/3 innings of four-hit shutout, no walks, 4 strikeouts, the best pitching performance by any Blue Jay so far this spring.
The suspense is finally over, that's for sure. I think ever since Wednesday, it's kind of been, you know, a lot on my mind, but it's good news, and I'm ready to get the show on the road.
It's at The Letters for Tuesday, March 29th in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, on Sportsnet.ca and on iTunes. Please like, share, favorite, and subscribe. My name is Arden Zwelling, and I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Ben Nicholson-Smith. Ben, what's going on?
Not a whole lot. I just watched you widen the hole in your coffee cup so you can basically mainline it into your bloodstream.
I'm not going to lie to you. This morning, we're going straight from the Red Bull into the coffee.
Wow.
Yeah, it's one of those mornings for me.
One of those mornings for me.
I have a few more of them than I like to admit.
Yeah, apparently.
The struggle is real. The addiction to the caffeine is very, very real.
It's very real.
It's crazy the difference that I feel. Like, it's, I don't want to even talk to anybody until I've had it.
Even after sometimes, but.
Yeah, well, that's fair. in general, I don't want to talk to anybody ever. But, like, really unapproachable before the caffeine is in the system.
And yet, here we are.
If I could hook up the IV drip, that would be nice. Like, if I could just get it straight into the bloodstream, like, just mainline it. Like, you know, I'm going to be, when you're talking, I'm going to be, like, moving away to freebase it just to, like, any way to get it in.
Yeah, exactly. No holds barred.
We live incredibly unhealthy lifestyles is what we've learned. Some people who don't live unhealthy lifestyles, one person in particular, Aaron Sanchez. How's that for a transition? Speaking of a guy who spent his winter working out, Aaron Sanchez has made the Toronto Blue Jays rotation. And this is obviously the topic of the week and the topic of spring, really. So why don't we talk about it right off the top? I mean, you know, I think there was a serious shift in thinking by the Toronto Blue Jays from where they were even just a week ago to where they are now on Aaron Sanchez. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think that over the course of the last few weeks, Gavin Floyd pitched really well. And I think that Aaron Sanchez just pitched so well that they were really tempted to give him a look. And John Gibbons clearly got the guy that he wanted to see in there. Pete Walker, of course, would be among those who saw Sanchez, has seen his progression from last year to this year. And I think, too, I mean, when you look at the overall picture of the Blue Jays pitching staff right now, it looks a lot different than we might have expected. But yeah, Sanchez, I think, turned a lot of people's opinions around in the course of a few short weeks.
I think that there were, like, I think he made it a situation where the Blue Jays, like, couldn't look at him and say, you didn't do enough. Like, they couldn't actually, like, sit him down and be like, sorry, Aaron, like, just didn't do it. Like, just wasn't enough for us. You know, when you look at the spring that he had, and not even just like put aside the results and just how his stuff looked, you know, 97, 98 consistently, two-seamer, big life, in the zone with all of his pitches, secondary stuff developing, which is, like, really, really encouraging in terms of a cutter and a changeup that he's throwing a lot more often, curveball for strikes. I mean, he just looks, like, so, so good. So they kind of, you know, and I really do think that the Blue Jays, up into, you know, and there might even still, there definitely is probably still people in the front office who think Aaron Sanchez is best suited for the bullpen and Gavin Floyd should be in this rotation. But it got to a point where you can't tell him, you can't find a fault with what he's done.
Because if you look at the questions that he faced entering spring training, it was probably, can he command the ball and can he throw secondary stuff for strikes?
Mm-hmm.
Can he throw that stuff effectively, curveballs, changeups? And to me, he's answered those questions, at least as much as he can in spring training. So now they're going to see what he can do. And maybe it's going to be another situation like last year where that command disappears a little bit in real games against real hitters. That could happen. If that's the case, they actually have a reasonable amount of starting depth and they know that Sanchez can succeed as a reliever. So it's a decent fallback plan, but there's definitely some upside where you can envision this guy pitching 6 innings and striking out 8. And that's not the kind of pitcher that the Blue Jays have a lot of.
The other questions are ones that couldn't really be answered in spring, or at least he answered them as effectively as he could, which is, you know, can you get lefties out and are you going to be durable and can you withstand the rigors of starting? And, you know, yeah, I mean, you know, he was fine against lefties this spring. A lot of them aren't going to be in the majors. So, you know, take what you will about that, but he was fine against them. And then on the durable side, I mean, guy added 25 pounds, you know, went down to Durham, worked out with the doctors at Duke, and you know, was on a very regimented eating schedule and workout schedule, and did the work to make himself at least appear more durable. I mean, you know, you can only, you know, body comp is, you know, it is what it is, right? Like, until he actually goes out and throws however many innings he's going to throw this year, we won't know. But he, I mean, to the best of his ability, answered those questions. But those questions will extend into the regular season, especially when you talk about, you know, a guy whose workload is going to be, you know, monitored really closely.
Exactly. And this is someone who's never pitched more than 133 innings in a season. So where does that leave him for this year? I don't know. The Blue Jays definitely aren't going to tell us. They shouldn't tell us, because if they do, then we're going to latch onto that number and essentially wring every last bit of entertainment value that we can all season long.
Oh, yeah.
They're not going to tell us. They have learned from the mistakes of Steven Strasburg and the Nationals and Matt Harvey and the Mets. It's going to be on the down low for sure. But I wonder, I mean, I wonder how much flexibility there is here. If Sanchez is pitching to his ability the way that he can, and it's July 15th, and he's clearly a number two or three type starter,
yeah,
it's not going to be easy to take him out of that rotation.
Absolutely not. And I think that as an industry, we need to get away from the innings. Because an inning can be three pitches, or it could be 30. So it doesn't tell you that much. And you can kind of say, like, oh, well, okay, over, you know, 100 or 150, you know, those things will average themselves out. But like, this is really what you want to go on, is a maybe it'll average itself out, hopefully it'll average itself out. No, like, there's much, you know, teams have to their disposal, whether they want to use them or not, much more advanced tools for measuring workload, for measuring readiness. You know, like, you can use the catapult system, which is like, if you watch a lot of, you know, international soccer or rugby, it's those kind of, it's a little like kind of rectangular device you'll see right on the top of guys' backs. And it's like, what it really is a GPS tracker, but it's reading their heart rate. It's reading the amount of miles or kilometers that they run. Like, you know, it's reading the exertion and how much, you know, Marcus Stroman used this stuff religiously when he was recovering from ACL surgery. That's why he was able to come back so quickly, because they measured everything that he did and they knew exactly when he was ready to progress and when he was ready to advance. They also use something called, you know, an omega wave device, which is something that there's two nobs basically, and one goes like right on your forehead, and the other goes right on your chest, and measures your central nervous system, and measures your readiness and your preparedness to, you know, undergo rigorous stress, whether that is working out, whether that is pitching, whether that, you know, whatever it may be. That's something else that Marcus Stroman used at Duke, and it allowed them to train him effectively, where every day they were doing something where he's making progress. So the Blue Jays can use this stuff to measure Aaron Sanchez's readiness, you know, and they can kind of incorporate that into what he does between starts. You know, how many pitches do you throw on your side? Do you throw aside at all? Are you really ready to make this start on your fifth day, or do we need to bump you back a day and get a spot starter in here? You know what I mean? Like, they can use this. So I feel like the innings thing is just such a, like, antiquated way of looking at it. And it's what we use because it's what we have access to. Those are the numbers that we have. Like, we don't know his heart rate. We don't know his exertion rate. Like, we don't know how, you know, all that kind of stuff. But the Blue Jays, especially with the new high performance department, should have access to all of this stuff. And I, you know, I would certainly hope that they're going to be using it to measure, you know, Aaron Sanchez's workload on something just a bit more advanced than innings.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And it would be a real stunner if the Blue Jays bring aboard this high performance team,
yeah,
and then go ahead and judge Aaron Sanchez on his innings. I mean, that would be a really, like you said, antiquated way of doing it. It's not how I would expect them to. And really, you can have all the data in the world, and the Blue Jays will, and some teams do, but you still don't know. And that's right. one of the frustrating realities of trying to monitor pitcher health. We do know you don't want to throw 150 pitches at once. You don't want to throw every single day, but we don't know whether 80 is the threshold or whether it's different for tall right-handers who throw from a low arm slot like Sanchez does.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many variables, and to some extent, the Jays are going to have to put up their hands and say, all right, he's pitching well now. Let's see what he can do.
It's another way, I think, of kind of removing bias from it. Because, like, Aaron Sanchez is going to want to take the ball whenever the Blue Jays will give it to him. At any point, like, he's going to want to start 162 games if they want him to. Like, you know what I mean? Like, as an athlete and a competitor, that's what you want. But, you know, a lot of times guys will say they feel good and they'll say they're ready to go when they're not. You know, and anybody will tell you, every pitcher in the major leagues is pitching. You know, any surgeon will tell you, open up any shoulder, any elbow, you'll find something. Every guy is pitching hurt. And at least you can kind of use this data and use, you know, it's 2016, right? Like, we can, you know, we can measure guys, you know, in a different way, and you can present them with these facts and say, like, look, you're not where you need to be, and you're not going to be at your best if you pitch now. It also removes the bias of, you know, a John Gibbons or a Pete Walker or a whoever saying, oh, Aaron Sanchez looks great. Like, he needs to throw, you know, he needs to keep going past whatever, you know, limits we have. And you can take this data and say, no, not really. Like, you could be messing this guy up for a really long time if you do this. Look at where Tim Lincecum is now, right? Like, a guy who, you know, they don't have similar arm action, but, you know, guys who kind of whip the ball, guys who throw very hard. And look at how his career fell off a cliff because he was used a lot.
Sure. Yeah, and there are tons of examples of guys who succeed early and flame out.
Yeah.
I wonder, you know, if the Blue Jays are in a situation where they're, say, at the trade deadline and Sanchez is pitching really well. I mean, that's just a tough thing to walk away from. And internally, are you going to have someone? I guess what they could do, too, is because you have Chavez and Floyd, they can potentially transition those guys to the rotation if and when an opening emerges. Because we saw it with Marco Estrada last year, and there's been a lot of talk that it would be tough to make that transition mid-season. But Estrada would seem to be a counterpoint to that, where he pulled it off and thrived afterwards.
No, absolutely. I think you have to have a system of checks and balances for something like this. When you're talking about a guy who, especially a guy who you've invested as much in as Aaron Sanchez, a guy who's as important to the future of your organization as Aaron Sanchez. I mean, what I like about him, you know, starting the season in the starting rotation is he gets to keep working on that changeup, working on that cutter, which could be so important to him as a starter. So he's not just a two-pitch guy as a starter. Like, you just need more than that. There are two really plus pitches, the two-seamer and the curveball, but you need more than that. So if he has that cutter and that changeup, like, it just, you know, on days when his curveball isn't at his best, guys can't just sit two-seamer or vice versa. Like, it allows him to keep developing that stuff. Maybe by, you know, the trade deadline, if Gavin Floyd is transitioning back to rotation, if the Blue Jays have made a trade, if, you know, maybe Drew Hutchison is lights out of Buffalo and comes up, then you can transition Aaron Sanchez into the bullpen, still get a lot of value out of him this year, and then in 2017 extend him even further as a starter.
Huge year for Sanchez, because if he succeeds as a starter, then you can look at him in 2017 as someone who's going to be right there with Stroman and potentially leading this rotation. If he struggles, then maybe that discussion shifts back to the bullpen, and that's where his career heads for the next couple seasons.
So the other side of this is Gavin Floyd now begins the year in the bullpen, which is interesting because, you know, that's something that he did last year for the Cleveland Indians. But, you know, it's not something that he's really done in his career. And when you kind of think about his repertoire and his approach as a pitcher, it's like it's so much easier to see how Aaron Sanchez would transition back into the bullpen because there's such an obvious place to pitch him. For Gavin Floyd, you know, I'm not even sure, you know, and I'll ask you, what kind of situations we think we're going to see Gavin Floyd in?
I think when you look at this Blue Jays pitching staff, you need a lot of strong relief arms because other than Ari Dickey, no one has pitched 200 innings in a season.
Mm-hmm.
Sanchez is a guy last year who had some trouble early in the season going deep into games. Happ is a guy who battles pitch counts and gets into trouble sometimes in the fifth or sixth inning. Estrada isn't someone who goes 7 and 8 innings. And Stroman, again, he's coming off an injury. He's never pitched more than, I guess, around 130 innings in the big leagues. So you add that up, you need to have a strong bullpen. I think there are going to be a lot of games where even if the Blue Jays starters are pitching well, they're going to be out of there with one out in the sixth inning.
Right.
You might need to get two innings before you go to Cecil, Asuna, Storen.
It's interesting. You know, I wonder how they're going to use him. And when, you know, you look at his kind of repertoire, Gavin Floyd's like, he's a guy who he was up to 95, 96 as a reliever last year. So obviously he's going to, you know, kind of go all out on his fastball. But then, you know, you always kind of refine your repertoire when you move into a relief role. So does he stick with his big curveball? Does he, you know, does he go to, you know, fastball slider? Like, does the changeup factor in? Like, you know, because you really need to come in and attack, and especially for a guy who started his entire career, you know, a lot of guys in the bullpen will talk about that bullpen mentality and how it's different than as a starter when you're thinking about how you're going to go through a lineup, you know, 2-3 times or whatever, what you're going to do this time, that time. And they'll tell you, you know, I remember Liam Hendricks used to talk a lot about this last year about, you know, making that transition to the bullpen, how it took him a while to learn that mentality. And then last year you saw him kind of come into his own as he kind of learned it. You know, I think that's a real thing, and we kind of, you know, it's kind of nebulous, right? And like intangible, but like it is a real thing, that difference in mentality and mindset. So it'll be interesting, you know, and in a way, when you look at how well Gavin Floyd has pitched this spring, if he's kind of like a middle relief role or if he's in mop up duty, is that almost a waste of a resource?
And I think that comes back to some of the reasoning for putting Floyd in the rotation, because at that point you would be able to use him there and have Sanchez in a high leverage spot. I don't think Floyd is going to be a high leverage reliever, but I think he can be a high value insurance policy for a team that's going to need a bunch of those this season. And I don't expect at all that he's going to be used really in significant bullpen spots, but right. he can still be valuable. And I think that there's probably some comfort level there, given that he's pitched 19 games in his career out of the bullpen, including 7 last year. So I think he can make that adjustment. And then the moment they need him to rejoin the rotation, I think that he'd be at the very top of that list.
And well, that's an interesting one, actually. I'll ask you that right now. On the Blue Jays depth chart of starting pitchers, we know the top 5. Yep. Who do you think's number 6?
Floyd.
Yeah, not Drew Hutchison, not Jesse Chavez, Gavin Floyd right off the bat. Yeah,
yeah, I think it's Floyd by a pretty big margin.
Really?
What would you say?
Because the thing is, Drew Hutchison's going to remain stretched out, and Gavin Floyd and Jesse Chavez aren't. So, I mean, if the Blue Jays needed somebody to step into the rotation, maybe it's almost by default Hutchison, because he's the only guy who's going to really be stretched out other than the other 4, starters at Buffalo. I mean, it's going to be a lot to ask Gavin Floyd to go from, pitching as a starter this spring to going to a bullpen role for, at least the beginning of April to going back to a starter. And I think he probably had this, of everybody in that competition, I guess Floyd had the second best spring to Aaron Sanchez. Well, Drew Hutchison had a fine spring as well, but it's an interesting thought, I think, of who is that number 6.
Yeah, I think it's going to be Floyd, because he's going to be throwing, let's say, 30 to 45 pitches in relief. That's how the right. Indians used him last year when Atkins and Shapiro were in Cleveland, still as Indians executives. So he was in that 30 to 45 pitch range out of the bullpen.
Right.
If he's there and you start him, first start 60, second yeah. start 80, and 3 starts in, you're right up to 100 again.
Right. Yeah. No, maybe you're right about that. Mentioned Jesse Chavez. How do you see him kind of fitting into the, I'll just read off what you tweeted this morning, how you kind of see the 8-man bullpen lining up, and I kind of agree with you for the most. Yeah, I agree with you completely. You got Storen, Osuna, Cecil at the back end. You got Floyd, Chavez, Venditti, Biagini, Arnold Leon is how you have it lining up. How do you see Chavez fitting in there?
I think that if the Blue Jays bullpen looks like this, and I think the only other version that I could imagine is Ryan Tepera in place of Venditti.
Yeah.
So we know Storen, Osuna, and Cecil are going to be the late inning guys.
Yeah.
I think Floyd and Chavez are going to be the guys that come in when you need a couple innings at once. So multi-inning relievers. And I honestly think on this Blue Jays team, there are going to be a lot of opportunities like that. I don't think that they should over-rely on their starting pitchers, because they've never done this before. You've got to lean on the bullpen, especially when you have some good arms. So Floyd and Chavez, multi-inning guys. And I think Venditti at that point becomes a left-on-left. You have Chris Davis or David Ortiz coming up in the 5th, 6th, 7th inning. You're not entirely comfortable with Jesse Chavez facing those guys in a big spot. Okay, you go to Venditti. He's your left-on-left guy. And if he has to get the occasional right-hander, fine. And that leaves Biagini and Leon, who are impressive guys. I think the Blue Jays clearly acquired them for a reason in the offseason. And even if they don't have a clear role, I'd say they can kind of be a Liam Hendricks type this year. You're pitching low-level, middle-inning, mop-up type roles. But I don't think the Blue Jays wanted to lose these guys. And that's why I'm expecting that when they do finalize this bullpen, we'll see those pitchers in it.
Yeah, I think Biagini's absolutely made the team, which is for a guy who hasn't been above AA and was a Rule 5 draft choice, I mean, credit to kudos to him. Like, serious, great spring training, 95, 96, has looked really good. He's a big, tall, imposing guy on the mound. I do wonder if either him or possibly Jesse Chavez, if the Blue Jays want to make one of those guys more of a one-inning, higher-leverage guy. And, Biagini kind of profiles better for it just because of his body composition and because of how hard he throws. But Jesse Chavez is a guy who, before he was a starter for the Oakland Athletics, was able to throw 94. And, with the Blue Jays, we saw him up there in his first go-around with the team, 94, 95. And then with, the Athletics, where he started developing that cutter and becoming a starter. But I do think one of those two, the Blue Jays would like to transition into a high leverage one inning role, just to take a bit of stress off of, Storen, Osuna, Cecil at the back end.
I think that's a good point. And you could see Biagini pulling that off. And of course, I'd be surprised if the first few games that he pitches in, the Blue Jays are ahead. I think he's the kind of guy who comes in, they're down 8-5, they're down 9-4. He comes in, he pitches an inning and goes in there with that big curveball, 95 miles an hour. And if he can establish himself in that role, maybe they hold on to him. I mean, Rule 5 picks are always kind of fun. And, and honestly, right from the first time we saw Biagini in that intra-squad game, I was kind of, I'm not going to say blown away, but if you're throwing 95 miles an hour with a curveball that really bites, that's going to be enough to get outs at the big league level.
No, I was impressed for sure. And I think you're right. I don't think that they'll, you know, throw him to the fire and say, like, yeah, I know we're up 2-1 against the Yankees going and, you know, pitch the eighth.
Nope.
But, he does kind of profile as that type. And I know the Blue Jays want another arm like that. That's why they want Gavin Floyd in the rotation, was because they really want Aaron Sanchez at the back end of that bullpen. Like, they really want even, like, John Gibbons at certain points. This is a guy who fought, I think, a lot for Aaron Sanchez to be in the rotation by the end of spring. At certain points, John Gibbons wanted, you know, that four-headed monster kind of at the back end of the bullpen. So I know they want to transition one of these guys to that role. I wonder who it's going to be.
Yeah, and you only need so many mop-up men, so take your shot with the Rule 5 pick, see what he can do.
That's the thing, right? Like, because you look at, like, past Storno, Osuna, Cecil, like, you've got kind of five guys who are all, you know, going to be low-mid leverage, right? So, you're going to have to turn one of them into that.
Yeah.
We're going to step away. We've talked about the bullpen enough. We're going to take a break, come back, talk about Marco Estrada and Edwin Encarnacion and some decisions regarding their health. We'll talk about Jesus Montero. We'll talk about Drew Hutchison, the fate of some other veterans in camp, all that and much more on At the Letters.
Flop left field. Murphy looking up. Jesus Montero, a two-out, three-run line drive homer, and the Mariners have taken the lead.
It continues on At the Letters. Arden Zwelling here with Ben Nicholson Smith. We're on Sportsnet.ca. We're on iTunes. We're on all kinds of podcatchers and things like that. Just punch us into Google. You know where to get us. Give us a rating if you'd like. Give us a review if you'd like. That'd be a pretty cool thing for you to do. We'll start here with a decision that I think has likely already been made, but it's going to have some effects on the Blue Jays, and that is Marco Estrada and how he starts the season. In my opinion, I think Marco Estrada is going to start the season on the disabled list. The Blue Jays just don't need that fifth starter really until like that second series against the Red Sox kind of in mid-April. So they can, you know, and Marco Estrada's obviously been kind of behind schedule this spring. I mean, the Blue Jays were always going to kind of pitch him behind schedule just because of his workload in 2015, but he's super behind schedule with the back injury and you know, coming along, so they can kind of leave him down to, you know, an extended spring to get a couple more starts and build up some more arm strength and just get to back to a better place. Because you saw even in 2015, Marco Estrada didn't start season the rotation, and then as he kind of transitioned into a starter, the first few starts were a little rough, and you know, it was a little touch and go there until he finally found his feet. So he's just kind of a guy who needs, I think, that time to build up and to get his feel, things like that. So I think Marco Estrada starts the year on the DL. Ben, do you agree?
Yeah, I think so. I think that makes sense. It's always been a possibility ever since he started dealing with that back soreness, and it's really not the end of the world just because they have two off days essentially within the first 7-8 days of the season.
And the way this is kind of the way, what I'd like to see happen is the Blue Jays take an extra position player, because I don't believe in the 8-man bullpen. I think it's dumb. But I think the Blue Jays are going to take the 8-man bullpen.
Yes, that certainly seems to be the way they're going. Now, if you weren't going to take the 8-man bullpen, that means one of those relievers isn't on the team. So who would it be?
One of those guys that we just mentioned?
Yes.
Isn't, to me, like Arnold Leon. Like, why? I know the front office likes him a lot, but I mean, I don't see any, you know, I don't think the Blue Jays really owe him anything. I don't think he's had the most incredible spring. Like, I think he's just kind of a guy.
He is a guy. Yeah. That's pretty fair.
Right?
But I don't know. I think there's a little intrigue there.
Yeah.
You know, he's probably not going to dominate for the Blue Jays this year, but he strikes me as the kind of pitcher who could be useful in that middle reliever role, where we kind of saw Ryan Tepera, Bo Schultz occupy that space last season and succeed. And if you cut him, he's out of options. Someone's probably going to take him.
Right. But I mean, if you go with the 8-man bullpen, you're going to end up cutting either Ezekiel Carrera or Junior Lake. Basically, you know, like in that fourth outfield competition, it's down to Carrera, Lake, Siciliani. Carrera and Lake do not have options.
No.
And Siciliani does have options. So
you're worried about losing Junior Lake?
I like Junior Lake, man. I think he could be a guy. Like I, and I, you know, to to me, like if it came down to losing Arnold Leon or Junior Lake, I'd probably lose Arnold Leon. I guess you'd go the other way.
Yeah, I'd take Leon over Lake.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I bet by May the Blue Jays will have neither of them. But you know, I just the 8-man bullpen is just so pointless to me.
I agree.
You just don't need that many guys.
I totally agree. I think you know, and that's where on paper I'm 100% with you. An 8-man bullpen is completely. It's just excessive. The one thing you could do, you know, is you can option both Tapera and Vendetti.
Right.
Start them both at Buffalo and essentially start the season with a heavy right-handed bullpen, including all the out-of-options guys.
But then you don't have somebody to go after lefties, really. Like, Vendetti is in that bullpen is your guy to attack lefties. And, you know, we were talking earlier, like, Tapera has kind of reverse splits and has done well against lefties. But if you option both those guys, then you don't have anyone.
Yeah. No, it's true, and so that's why you have to essentially make the decision that's going to leave you with the best team for the entire season. You know, you can't get too wrapped up, I think, in the first couple of weeks. But at the same time, I mean, you're looking at a Rays lineup. If we do want to zoom in really specifically, they have a lot of left-handed hitters.
They sure do.
Kiermaier, Loney, Dickerson, Logan Morrison, Brad Miller. I mean, this is a team that is going to come at you from the left side of the plate. So you need to have a response to that.
You absolutely do. And that response is not going to be Randy Choate, who was released from camp on Tuesday morning. Same with Steve Delabar. I think astute ATL listeners will remember that, you know, I said a few weeks ago, Blue Jays and Steve Delabar have kind of been like just drifting apart for a couple seasons. Really, since that 2013 All-Star year, they have been very much drifting apart. The Blue Jays haven't liked what they've seen from Steve Delabar for whatever reason. Even though, you know, to my, and I'm not a scout, I don't know anything, but to my eyes, I mean, he's still striking guys out, still throws hard, you know, it looked all right. But the Blue Jays didn't like what they saw from him. Steve Delabar was unhappy with the Blue Jays with, you know, like the will he, won't he be a September call-up, and with the, you know, pitching in Buffalo as much as he did. It just kind of seemed like this was the inevitable conclusion of the Steve Delabar era in Toronto for a couple of years now.
Yeah, it did. And Randy Choate too. I mean, these guys are the types of pitchers that you want to take a look at. But if you were expecting Randy Choate at age 40, 41 to come in and dominate, that's a tall order. And that's, again, that puts more of an emphasis on Pat Vendetti. Whether or not he's on that opening day roster, I'm pretty convinced we're going to see a lot of him this year.
Randy Choate can go for me because I just think the game has moved past the one out guy.
Really? You know? I think it's going more toward the one-out guys.
You think so?
Yeah.
How so?
Well, just because you see so many big bullpens, you see starters leaving the game early, it puts more reliance on bullpens. I think you see so much specialization.
I prefer a guy who has flexibility, who I can use for more than one out, who's, you know, gives
absolutely
versatility. Yeah.
Yeah, give me a 9-inning guy.
Well,
sure.
Okay, yeah, okay, obviously. But like in terms of bullpen roles, like if it's Pat Vendetti versus Randy Choate for me, I'm going to take Pat Vendetti 10 times out of 10.
Totally agree.
Yeah. So, but you just said that it's moving more towards one.
I think the game as a whole. I mean, right. I think most teams would take Vendetti over Choate, but you see the way teams use bullpens and they go to guys for one out. You see so many pitching changes. The average, I think teams use on average something like 4 or 5 pitchers every game. Whereas 20 years ago, that would have been 3.
No, absolutely. No, for sure. Yeah, I guess so. There's also the fact that Randy Choate throws 82.
that's the big issue here. Yeah,
there's also that. Podcast producer Sam McKee might be able to get it up to 82. I don't know. So those two gone. What else? There's a decision on Edwin Encarnacion that needs to be made. Edwin Encarnacion is not going to go to Montreal, so that the Blue Jays can still backdate his DL if they need to. They're going to keep him in minor league games. I mean, he looked fine the other day. Like, hit a just monstrous home run yesterday in a game. But you know, and he's a guy who's kind of said, like, you know, I don't need that much time to get my swing going. But if you kind of look at the historical stats, he has been a bit of a slow starter throughout his career. So, you know, maybe you DL him to start the year. And maybe that's how you save the Junior Lake, because you have to save him. But right. Like, you know, maybe how do you think that plays out? I mean, is Edwin Encarnacion going to end up on the DL? Will he come north with the team but not play for the first couple of games, or is he in the lineup opening day?
You know, I wonder how much he's going to keep playing in these minor league games, because as long as he's in these minor league games, then it makes it easier to backdate him, put him on the disabled list. So if he were to start playing in the big league games, then that would be a sign to me that the Blue Jays are very confident he can break camp with the team. Certainly the home run the other day is a good sign, but he's got to be able to do that a couple times in a row. And getting your timing isn't something that you can judge on a few plate appearances. It's really got to happen a bit more gradually. Even on the low end, you're usually looking at 30 plate appearances.
Right. And maybe do it against a guy who like has a shot of pitching above, you know, high A, right? Like, you know, maybe do it against some actual pitching. Like he just hasn't seen that yet. So it's going to be an interesting decision. It's going to be interesting to see how a lot of things kind of play out for the Blue Jays over this, you know, over just even the next few days through to Montreal and into April. Cause you know, there's even like, you look at, there's a lot of veterans in camp and there's a lot of guys who, you know, could be, you know, moving out of the organization, moving in. You had the, you know, Roberto Hernandez is going to elect free agency. You had that the other day. I mean, there's also, you know, there's, you know, Wade LeBlanc, Dominic Brown, like there's a lot of those guys around who could be going either way.
And I think the best case for the Blue Jays is you get as many of these guys as possible at AAA, because if you have some reasonably good depth in Buffalo, then you're going to be much better positioned to handle injuries as they come up during the season. So if they could somehow stash a Dom Brown there and see what he can do, I mean, he's an interesting player, and the same goes for guys like Junior Lake or Arnold Leon if they clear waivers. I mean, these are the types of guys. Carrera has cleared waivers as recently as last year. I think he's going to be on the roster, but these are the types of guys that if you can stash them down there, they can make an impact for you in July or August when you need someone.
No, absolutely. And that's what's been kind of interesting about the Blue Jays. They're just taking like all these shots on these kind of like on these guys that are like kind of floating around in baseball purgatory. One of them being Jesus Montero, coming off of the Seattle Mariners roster, claimed off waivers. AJ Jimenez optioned to make room a day after he almost gave Drew Hutchison a concussion with a throw to second base, which is something I'd never seen happen before. That Jesus Montero into the fold, maybe, you know, a guy that will help you. That's maybe a guy who will be playing for the Blue Jays at some point this year.
Yeah, it's a pretty big maybe, and he's going to have to clear waivers too, but I think he's the type of player that the Blue Jays should take shots on, because you never know when that power is going to translate. And if something clicks at AAA and he can get a shot at the big leagues, this is the park you want to be playing in. It's not Safeco Field. It's not even Yankee Stadium. This is the park for any hitter trying to rebuild value. So I think it's worth a shot. I don't think it's likely. He's probably never going to amount to anything, but this is the kind of guy you look at.
Whoa. Never going to amount to anything.
Probably.
This is a top 10 prospect once upon a time that you're talking about here, Ben.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's why he's worth the shot. I don't think that if he probably was going to amount to something, he wouldn't have been on waivers. He's probably not going to.
You know who else was on waivers at one point? Edwin Encarnacion.
Right. Yeah. And the industry missed on him. And maybe the Blue Jays are seeing something in Montero that no one else is.
I love it. Like, I love, like, giving these guys shots. Like, because it's just, you know, it just makes it so interesting. It's cool that the Blue Jays right now are an organization who seems like they'll give anybody a shot. Just like, yeah, come on. Like, yeah, let's do this. Like, let's see what you got, you know? Like, yeah, you ever met Bobby Tewksbury? Like, come on over, you know?
Yeah, he'll be doing the leg kick in no time.
You know what I mean? Like, it's so, and like, Montero's an interesting guy. Like, let me look at it this way. Like, Jesus Montero, 26, miscast as a catcher. Right? Like, really not a catcher. Scouts love the potential in his bat, or at least have as he's coming up.
They have.
Highly regarded bat, you know, years ago. Has raked in the minor leagues. Very good numbers in the minors. Struggled to hit in the majors. Struggled to stick on major league teams. You know who else was once 26 years old? Miscast as a catcher. Scouts love the potential in his bat. A guy who had raked in the minor leagues, but had struggled to hit in the majors and had struggled to stick with major league teams. You know who else was like that?
Who
Josh Donaldson.
Yeah. I don't know.
Same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that is, that's, if it was that easy to replicate, then there would be a lot more Josh Donaldsons. I mean, I think that, and again, it's a credit to Donaldson that he was able to beat those odds. But at that point, it was extremely unlikely that Donaldson was going to amount to anything.
Josh Donaldson at 26 had 294 plate appearances for the Oakland Athletics, 687 OPS. Like, he sucked. Like, he wasn't good. OBP below 300, struck out a ton, didn't walk much, wasn't a catcher, was still, you know, in at a position they should have been playing. If at that point, if I said, Ben, over under Josh Donaldson MVP awards in his career, 0.5.
Right? I would have taken the under.
I think you would have taken the under. You would have said the same thing you said about Jesus Montero. He's never going to amount to anything.
I didn't say he's not going to. I said he's probably not going to. And I stand by that. I think that, with all due respect to Montero, by the way, and I hope that he proves me wrong. I mean, it's always great to see these guys succeed. I just think that anytime you're talking about a waiver claim and saying, oh, there's a chance he could do this. Yes, there's a chance. That's why you make the claim. There's also a bigger chance that he won't.
Are you telling me Jesus Montero isn't going to win an MVP award?
I would venture to say that that's unlikely.
If there's any franchise that's had like incredible success with guys like this, right? Like Jose Bautista, 28, what was he, right? Edwin Encarnacion at what, you know, when did he turn good? 27, 28, right?
You got to take the shots.
Josh Donaldson, you know, like, and if there was ever a ballpark to do it, if there was ever a franchise that seems to just like, you know, take guys who, you know, didn't, you know, who have been highly regarded bats at young points in their career and just haven't worked out for one reason or another in other organizations. And they get to Toronto and, you know, they get the codes from the man in white and all of a sudden they hit 40 bombs.
Yeah. It's all about those codes. That's all it takes.
Anyway, I love a move like that. And I also love that because I'm like a, like, trade all your prospects kind of guy. So like the fact that the Blue Jays now have in their organization from the 2010 Baseball America prospect rankings, number 4, Jesus Montero, number 13, Justin Smoak, and number 15, Dominic Brown.
Wow.
Like, to that would have been like one of the, if you could have, they obviously didn't play for the same teams at the same time, but if you got a haul like that in a prospect trade, in a trade, right? Like, yeah. you know what I mean? Like, you would have, you know, like your organization would be like, this is going to be the next great team. They have these, you know, 3 top 15 prospects. I love it because it just illustrates how, like, dumb the whole prospect ranking thing can be.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
there's some guys like Byron Buxton's going to be really, really good, yeah. right? Like Carlos Correa, really, really good. But like, there's a lot, you know, like when Blue Jays fans are griping that, you know, trade Jeff Hoffman or Daniel Norris or like, you just don't know.
Yeah. You really don't know. For the record, I am pro claiming Jesus Montero.
I didn't mean to like ambush you with that.
Yeah. It's a good move.
Yeah.
It's a low probability move. And that's the exact kind of move that you got to take if you've got 40-man roster spots to play with.
Man, me like sitting here hosting a podcast for Sportsnet, that was a pretty low probability move. If you could have seen me at like 22, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like even at like 26, it was even a little bit unlikely, even though I was already at Sportsnet. Like
a little dicey.
Yeah. I love the low probability moves.
Right. You got it.
Love it. I love it. I love it when a guy just like makes everybody shut up. Like, you know, just like Josh Donaldson has. Just like Jesus Montero will make you shut up then.
Over under Jesus Montero home runs for the Toronto Blue Jays in his career. I'll set it at 9.5.
Over.
Wow.
Over. Play it. Yeah, whatever. I have to. Right?
Like, I could have said 40.5 and you'd have to take the
over. Yeah. I kind of have to take that over, right? Yeah. Like I can't after everything I just said.
I'm taking the under.
Yeah, of course you're taking the under.
He has to get through waivers. He might not even be a Blue Jay in 5 days.
I know. Yeah, and I'm with you that it's probably not going to work out. Wouldn't it be great if it did?
It'd be fun.
It's as if there isn't like a massive hole at designated hitter that's about to open up for the Toronto Blue Jays, right?
Yeah.
You know, well, after this season.
It's going to be a different looking team a year from now, that's for sure.
Absolutely. Speaking, let's go from a year prior, opening day starter Drew Hutchison. This is a sloppy transition. Is now again an opening day starter. It's just going to be a Coca-Cola Field. Is that what it's called? Coca-Cola Field in Buffalo?
In Buffalo.
Who knows? Down there and yeah, nailed it. Thanks, producer Sam McKee. Drew Hutchison will be starting an opening day. It's just for the AAA Buffalo Bisons. He had a nice spring, but this felt, and we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, like this, there's no way Drew Hutchison could make this team. I don't care if his ERA was 0 through the spring. Like, I just don't think he was going to make the team. Like, and you know, which is fine. He goes down, you know, he's going to keep kind of working on whatever he's working on. And, you know, he can be so vague when you're talking to him, right? And he, you know, he plays him pretty close to the vest and doesn't really share a lot. Even last year, talking to Pete Walker, he'd be like, yeah, this guy's like throwing fine. Like, you know, velocity's there, like off-speed stuff has bite. It's just, you know, he gets into these like disaster innings, right? And he just has these like outings where it's like unbelievable some of the things that happen. What do you think the Blue Jays are looking for out of Drew Hutchison in Buffalo? Like, what do you think that, you know, what happens next?
I think he's got to go down there and consistently pitch, let's say 6 innings and command the strike zone. They probably want to see a lot more strikeouts than walks. I don't think they're going to judge him on what kind of hits he allows in a cold weather environment where you have a wide mix of different defensive players. So I don't think you look at the ERA so much, but I'm sure they'll have scouts at most, if not all of his starts, trying to assess where his off-speed stuff is at, and is he throwing 93 to 94 miles an hour? If you can do all those things, if some of the results are there and the Blue Jays have an opening, then Hutchinson could come up. But again, as a guy with options, that can be a curse for these guys. And I don't think that Hutchinson is someone who's necessarily going to be on the team for extended periods. Right. If they call him up for a couple starts and move him back and forth a few times throughout the season, that wouldn't surprise me.
It's interesting because he is just 25, and there could be a future with this franchise. Like, I remember, when Brett Cecil was 25 and trying to, make it still as a starter, right? And, ended up getting transitioned into a different role. And now, this offseason, if he has another year like he's had the last two, dude's going to get paid. So, there is still very much a future. The fact that Drew Hutchinson still has options just tells you there's very much a future still for this guy in the organization. Like, and they do owe, him something in terms of development and in terms of seeing what he can still do. It is interesting. And we talked about who would be the sixth guy on the depth chart. Like, Gavin Floyd kind of just stepped in and lapped Drew Hutchinson like immediately and just jumped above him almost, it seems. But it'll be interesting to see just how, and we're going to do our over-unders next week in our Blue Jays season preview, so I won't throw it at you, but I, an interesting over-under will be games started in the major leagues for Drew Hutchinson.
Yeah, it really will. And I think he is going to be someone they need to rely on because, as we've said many times here, you do need lots of different starters throughout the season. Hutchinson, to me, will be one of those guys, but what a difference, like you said, a year makes in his case, because a year ago this time, we were talking about, can he be a number two starter? Can he take a step forward? When in reality, he took quite a big step back last year.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be interesting to see how it's just going to be interesting to see how this rotation just evolves. Like you said, Blue Jays is going to use at least 10 guys probably. Like, and it's going to be so interesting to see how he fits in, how Gavin Floyd fits in, Jesse Chavez. What's nice is that there are like legitimate options to step in if you need a spot start or if, somebody pulls a lat.
That's the Gavin Floyd difference for me, where he was kind of a lottery ticket. Again, going back to that low probability discussion, he's one of those low probability guys. And so far, that investment has paid off for the Blue Jays, where he looks like someone you could legitimately call on. That just deepens everything. Hutchinson is able to go to AAA. Chavez doesn't become your first line of defense that way. And I think that it's a really pleasant surprise, maybe along with Michael Saunders, the most pleasant surprise to come out of spring training.
We are going to step away on ATL. We're going to come back with your Twitter questions, of which, oh my God, I have a lot of mentions. So of which there seems like there are a lot of them. Can't wait to get to these questions when we come back after this on At The Letters.
Now it's time for some burning questions and honest answers. It's the At The Letters mailbag with Arden Zwelling and Ben Nicholson Smith.
It continues on At The Letters. Arden Zwelling, Ben Nicholson-Smith. Bonus third segment today, answering your questions. A truly remarkable amount of questions. We thank you for all of them. We're not going to get to all of them because there are just so many. If you asked about Aaron Sanchez, we talked about him for like 10 minutes off the top.
Yep, covered off.
I think you know how we feel about Aaron Sanchez. I think you definitely know how we feel about Jesus Montero. If you asked about him.
Yeah, there is no question left on that.
Let's start here. And this is not even really a question, but I do kind of want to talk about this guy. At Tulo Whiskey says, R.A. Dickey will win 20 games. First of all, no, he won't. But second of all, R.A. Dickey is an interesting guy on this pitching staff, because you mentioned earlier in the podcast that he's the only guy who's thrown 200 innings in a season before. So this guy, this is, you think the Blue Jays leaned on, or were thinking that they were leaning on Robert Allen Dickey, after the Mets trade in that year when he was like the staff ace, supposedly. I mean, this year they're really leaning on him to be a workhorse, to log a lot of innings. And when you talk about R.A. Dickey, you talk about a guy whose strikeout rate fell off a cliff last season, declined massively. And yes, he was dealing with, he had a torn ligament in his knee that he was pitching through. And, he said he was, at times he's saying he had general body crankiness was how he described it. I think he was pretty beat up. And he saw the kind of knuckleball velocity kind of be all over the place. So it's interesting that, to think about what kind of product we're going to get from R.A. Dickey this year. Where do you stand on that?
I think it's going to be innings. I think that's the target for him and probably for the Blue Jays. And he's somebody who pitches to contact. So even with a declining strikeout rate in 2015, I think that he's someone who relies a lot on the defense. And for his sake, it's probably a very good thing that the Blue Jays are projected as a pretty good defensive team.
Yes, absolutely. And I think if he can limit the home runs, which is, you know, a big thing, if he can keep those, you know, he was, you know, 26 years ago, 25 last year. If he can bring that down a little bit, that'd be nice. You know, he's going to give up his hits because sometimes, you know, that the knuckleball, she don't dance. But, you know, I think that it's not really being talked about right now. But R.A. Dickey's a guy that is going to be really, really crucial to this rotation. Obviously, there's a lot of attention paid to Marcus Stroman and Aaron Sanchez. But R.A. Dickey is going to be very, very crucial to this rotation.
No question there. Our next Twitter comment comes from at BlueJayNest65. And BlueJayNest is wondering, when Sanchez goes to the pen, do the Jays rob Peter to pay Paul? And he means trade Encarnacion or Bautista to acquire a starting pitcher.
No, I don't see that happening at all. I don't, you know, because I mean, if the Blue Jays are good, I mean, if you're looking to acquire a starting pitcher at that point, you're good, really. So, you know, because you've got, if you're just running, you know, playing out the string and you suck, like you can just bring up anybody from the minors. So if you're good at that point, why would you trade two of your best hitters? Like that doesn't really make a lot of sense going into the playoffs. So I think the only situation where the Blue Jays ask Edwin Encarnacion or Jose Bautista to waive their 10-5 rights is if the Blue Jays are very, very bad at the trade deadline.
Yeah. And in that case, they're looking to acquire pieces for the future. They're not looking to acquire starting pitchers for this season.
All right. Jamie Holtz at Jay Holtz asks, who is your dark horse on the Blue Jays this year for a capital B breakout season?
Well, if we're going capital B breakout, I think we have to go beyond Michael Saunders, Aaron Sanchez. Those are the guys that most people are going to point to. But we'll dig a little deeper here on At the Letters. I'll go Joe Biagini, the Rule 5 pick. We talked about him earlier. I think he's got some of the things that teams look for in high power relievers.
Yeah, you know, it's a veteran team, and we kind of know, you know, who guys are, right? So there's not really that many candidates to be a breakout guy. I mean, I think I'm kind of with you on Biagini, like, you know, maybe Darwin Barney shows you something that you haven't seen before. Like maybe, but he's not going to play that much. So in terms of guys that are actually going to see the field, like, you know, I don't know, does Marcus Stroman count really? Like not really. Does Aaron Sanchez count? So there's really just not that many candidates to be breakouts on this team. So it's honestly, it's a hard one to answer.
Especially with a capital B.
Yes.
Next question comes from one of our most loyal listeners at John Corbin Music. And John is wondering, who do you see as a breakout candidate this year in Major League Baseball? So going beyond the Blue Jays, who do you have on that list?
I don't know. Does Kyle Schwarber count?
Sure.
Is he like? Do people know about him yet?
I mean, I think people know, but he could still break out.
Like he could be really, really good. So you know, like he could be kind of next level. So that I'll take him. Who do you got?
I'm gonna take another 2015 rookie, and Francisco Lindor, I think, gets a lot of recognition. He was second in Rookie of the Year voting, but I think he could really gain a lot more and emerge from the shadow of Carlos Correa after hitting .313 with an .835 OPS as a shortstop last year.
Corey Seager, another guy.
Great maybe, pick.
Right? Corey Seager, I believe, going to start at shortstop for the Dodgers.
Yep.
And he's a guy who's like really, really good. And I'll throw in a guy I mentioned earlier in the podcast, Byron Buxton for the Twins, won their center field job. And he's legit. He's
very
good.
Legit.
So those two, I just snuck two more in. Do you want to throw in? Other than Jesus Montero, do you want to throw any others in? Or?
Yeah, you've got all kinds of breakout candidates. Hey, I'll stick with Lindor. He's my guy.
Another loyal listener, Eric Hartman at Eric Hartman, Eric with the C. Who is this year's Colt Hines, the guy who makes the opening day roster, but we forget exists by Victoria Day?
Wow. Well, not to single anyone out here, but...
So the purpose of the question is to single somebody out.
I think Leon... And again, I'll go to Biagini, even though I just picked him as a breakout candidate for the Blue Jays. These are the types of players who are in tough. They're not the top tier of bullpen arms. Teams have to make room on the roster. The Blue Jays, if they open with eight, are going to have to cut a reliever within a couple of weeks. Those are the guys toward the bottom of the pecking order in the bullpen.
Joe Biagini's going to break it, both break out and be forgotten by Victoria Day. Well, it's because there's not, you know, that's the thing with this roster and with the depth that they've built. Like we were saying, like there's not that many candidates to either be breakouts or be the Colt Hineses. Right?
I realize I'm a bit all over the map.
Well, you know, so, you know, I think, you know, Biagini, like, I, you know, Leon definitely stands out. Like if he makes the roster, you know, for opening day, like I can't imagine how, you know, how long he's going to be around. Venditti could be that guy if he, you know, comes north and doesn't pitch well.
But you won't forget him. That's why I didn't pick him. Because he throws with both arms. You're never going to forget him.
Maybe Darwin Barney, if Devin Travis does come back in May and, you know, Barney ends up getting, you know, because he's got that major league deal. But I mean, he would be the odd man out in that infield. You know, if like a, say a Junior Lake ended up making the roster on opening day, like he would be that guy. But that's kind of the thing about the depth of the Blue Jays to build is they're just, these guys just don't, you know, it's a veteran team and it's a stable team, which you have to like.
Here's another one from at GWL Baseball, who wonders, who is the one player the Blue Jays can't afford to lose to injury this season?
Definitely a lot of options here. I'm going to go Russell Martin. Because I mean, just the depth is so, so thin, and you know, there's a lot of other guys you could pick, but if you lose Russell Martin for any extended period of time, every day Josh Tolley, every day Tony Sanchez, every day Humberto Quintero, no es bueno.
I'll say Josh Donaldson, MVP. And even though the Blue Jays have a nice defender in Matt Dominguez with some power at AAA, there's just no replacing the MVP.
At Carmine Descanio, heard that San Diego possibly shopping James Shields. Is this someone the Jays would look at, Ben?
That would stun me. I think that if you're looking for starting depth, the Blue Jays are probably going to be looking for guys who are more affordable than James Shields and probably a little younger. I think the Jays want to get younger as the next couple seasons progress, and Shields is someone who's probably heading out of his prime rather than into it.
Gotta love Big James. Big game James, but yeah, $21 million for 2016, 2017, and 20 each of 2016, 17, 18, as he's 34, 35, 36. I would be shocked as well.
Speaking of trades, we have a related question from underscore Dave Anthony, and he's wondering, do the Jays have the prospect pool to pull off a big acquisition at the non-waiver trade deadline?
Yeah. I mean, you do have Anthony Alford, you have Max Pentecost, you have Dalton Pompey, Sean Reed Foley. I mean, there's obviously, like, you know, there are kind of highly regarded prospects in the system. I mean, I really don't think the Blue Jays want to trade from that pool. I mean, it's, I think, building prospect depth is absolutely a priority right now. So I can't imagine them trading any of these guys. But also, I mean, these are players that were drafted under a previous administration. And, you know, maybe the new administration feels differently about them.
Yeah, I would agree. I think they have enough to pull off a big move. And the question is going to be how close they are, what pieces they need. I think the Blue Jays should be active at the trade deadline, and we're getting way ahead of ourselves. But if you're a team that's going to contend, which they should, then you should add. You should make your team better at the deadline.
At Mike Robertson 24, if the Jays could sign any one player in baseball, who would you pick?
Wow.
So basically, just pick who, yeah, any player, pick a player in baseball to start a franchise, I guess is the question.
Well, he's saying the Jays, so that's pretty specific.
What do you mean?
It's not a blank slate. It's if the Jays could sign any one player on baseball.
Yeah, I mean, the Jays conceivably could sign anybody in baseball if they, you know.
So I guess we're assuming, we're not just looking at free agents, and are we assuming they make free agent money, or they're on their current contract?
Any one player in baseball. Pick a guy.
It's Bryce Harper or Mike Trout. I mean, I would say...
Make your choice.
Mike Trout.
Bryce Harper.
There you go.
More fun. He's more fun. Look, they're both going to put up pretty much the same, like, kind of lines. Like, they're going to be pretty similar. Like, maybe Trout's a bit better, but Bryce Harper a bit younger. But Bryce Harper's just more fun. Like, he's just more emotion, more, you know, he's just a funner guy to have on your team, I think.
Mike Trout is pretty fun.
No, he's so boring. He's a robot.
He's not boring at
all. He's so boring, dude.
Man, people said that about Troy Tulowitzki. I don't know if he's a robot. I don't think any of these guys are really robots. I think the Trout, if fans of the Angels, I'm sure, are not sitting there saying that Mike Trout is boring.
No, they're not. But if you could have one of him, I think on the list of interesting guys, Bryce Harper's above Mike Trout, for me at least.
Yeah, Harper is a great choice.
All right.
Great choice.
You're up.
Here's a question for you. And this is a good one from at Abstract Monkey. Why not call Abello for leadoff?
I don't like that at all. I don't like the you know, he's a guy who swings at the first pitch like all the freaking time. And he's you know, the Chris Colabello is a hitter. He's not gonna walk much. He doesn't see a ton of pitches. You know, I just don't see him as a table setter. He doesn't run very particularly well. Like, I just don't see it at all. Like, I know he had a what was his OBP last year? 367 OBP last year, but I mean, it's all hits, and a lot of it's just singles. It's fine. Like, he's a good hit. I'm not saying he's a bad hitter. I just don't see him as a leadoff hitter.
Yeah, with his power, he strikes me more as a traditional number five hitter. So that means in this lineup, he's a number, what, seven hitter, realistically? Yeah,
pretty much.
So I think that, yeah, very, maybe a six hitter in this lineup. But he's kind of that traditional power guy. And I like the OBP, but like you said, I'm not convinced that that's going to be there every year. And so I don't necessarily see him as a fifth.
What was the BABIP last year? Like 10 million or something?
It was like 390, like, I think.
So, you know, it'll be interesting to see what we get out of Chris Colabello this year. And if he is Chris Colabello again.
I think he can be good. I think he's probably best suited basically where he is in that number 6-7 part of the order.
2015 BABIP 411, according to Fangraphs. 411.
It's crazy.
It's insane. Like, it has to come down at some point. Final question from Michael DeLosa. Who would you put in the rotation behind R.A. Dickey to benefit from the knuckleball effect?
It's a good question.
It is a good question.
How about Aaron Sanchez?
I'm with you. That's 100% the guy I would. Because can you imagine going from facing a knuckleball to facing 98, right? Like, and it's dependent on if you really believe there is that much of a knuckleball effect. Like, you know, I don't know. I know some people in the game believe it, some people don't, but that's definitely the guy that I would pick for sure.
Yeah, I think that makes the most sense.
Oh, and one more, just for fun. Which from at the Real Ancour, which Blue Jays position player is most likely to be called upon in emergency relief pitching situation?
That's a great question.
It's a great question.
I hope it happens. I think I'll say Darwin Barney, because you don't see starting position players called on, and Darwin Barney could probably get a few outs if he had to.
Yeah, 100% Darwin Barney would be that guy. Maybe Ryan Goins with an outside shot at it would be kind of the other guy who maybe. Who would you want to see?
Batista.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That'd big time. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
He's got the arm, right? Like, it'll never happen in a million years, but he's got the arm. Can you imagine the Bautista mound presence, the scowl, like the staring in? And if somebody got, if somebody took him deep, the biggest bat flip you've ever seen in your life.
Yeah. It would be awesome. It would be a lot of fun. Who do you think would be the best Blue Jay pitcher?
Marcus Stroman.
Among position.
Who would be the best? Oh, yeah. Geez. I don't know, man. Like, it was funny when Cliff Pennington came in and did it last year, right? Because, like, he was, like, legit. And remember when he came in to do it, Russ Martin went to the mound. It was kind of like, so what do you have? And Pennington was like, fastball, changeup, curveball, slider. Martin's like, what? So, who would be the best? I don't know.
How about Martin? I think he'd be good.
No. Well, yeah, I guess he's got the arm.
He's got such a good arm. Yeah, I bet if you clocked that throw down to second base, he'd be upper 80s.
He does have an arm. He understands pitching pretty well. I don't know if he has the off speed stuff. Hold up, frankly.
I mean,
no faith in the secondary.
I don't know if any of these guys have the off speed stuff.
No faith in the secondary pitches from Russ Martin.
I think he could snap off a slider.
Yeah, anybody could snap off a slider, really. Can you locate it though? That's the thing. You might have to go down Triple A for a bit of conditioning. You know, it might just a bit of seasoning, work on it.
I think he'd be my choice for the best.
Russ Martin?
Pitcher. Yeah.
Interesting. Players. I think, Jose Bautista, because he just tried to throw it by everybody.
Donaldson's a great athlete.
Donaldson would love it. Yeah. Donaldson would have, he would love it. It would be like, remember when, did you see Johnny Gomes pitch last year?
No.
And he came out and he was he sprinted in from the bullpen and he took it like so seriously. He gave up like a bomb and like tipped his cap to the guy and like.
A friend of Donaldson's.
Fist pumping. Donaldson talks about Johnny Gomes as like being a massive like mentor for him in the game.
Yeah.
So this is clearly something there.
Something to look forward to.
There you go.
2016 Jays.
Yeah. And you know what? You can look forward to the fact that opening day is so close. It'll be Sunday on Sportsnet. You can see it there. There's only one more game in Florida, then two games in Montreal, and then the Blue Jays play actual baseball that matters. It's going to be really fun to watch.
And you'll be there in Montreal?
I will be there in Montreal. I don't know if any Blue Jays are going to be there in Montreal. Like, who are they going to bring on this trip? I think J-Hap starts the first game and then a bunch of scrubs in the second game. But, like, are you going to bring Jose Bautista to Montreal for, like, why?
Well, especially when you open in Tampa.
That's the thing, right? Yeah. Like, who are you going to bring up to Montreal just to go back to Tampa?
No, it's true.
Anyway, we'll find out this weekend. Yes, I'll be there. Read all about it on sportsnet.ca. Read everything Ben has to do on sportsnet.ca. Also on Twitter, at @BNicholsonSmith. I'm at Arden Zwelling. Thanks to our producer, Sam McKee, at Sam A. McKee. What do you got?
I was just going to add full season preview next week.
Right, on the podcast. Yes. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, we're going to look at, once we actually know who's on this roster and like how things are looking, yeah, we'll take a look at the Blue Jays. We'll have a game to talk about, which will be nice. We'll do it on Monday.
Couple games. Oh, just one game.
Yeah. I don't know. We can do it on Tuesday. We'll figure it out. One or two games. It's not going to matter either way. We'll have actual baseball to talk about. Yeah, full season preview. Stay tuned for that. Stay tuned for everything.
Thanks. Sounds good. I'll be staying tuned.
Thanks, Ben. All right. For Ben, for Sam, I am Arden. Thanks for coming along with us on At The Letters.